Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, I'm Mary Eileen Williams at Feisty Side of 50 Radio, and this show is a celebration of baby boomers who are embracing life as we grow older. And as many of us know, one of the true joys in life is sharing memorable stories with our older grandchildren, especially those books that are both thought-provoking and a great read, and that's where today's guest comes in. Jennifer Donnelly is a multi-award-winning New York Times best-selling author of several highly regarded books. These include, and I'm going to do a brief list here, but A Northern Light, which was awarded a Prince Honor and a Carnegie Medal, Revolution, named a best book by Amazon, Kirkus Reviews, and the School Library Journal, as well as many other books for young readers, most notably Lost in a Book, which spent over 20 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. So this lady knows how to write. And I am excited to have Jennifer join us today to share all about her new and just released book, Beastly Beauty. This latest novel is based on a fairy tale we all know, but there's a delightful gender-related twist that is sure to keep you captivated and turning pages. Boy, I can't wait to chat with the author herself. So welcome, Jennifer.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'd like to start out, and we did get a chance to chat before we went on air, but I do want to start out by saying congratulations. You have really hit the success of a best-selling author, and it's got to be both exciting and, you know, gratifying to know that your words make such a difference in young readers, especially lives.
It's hugely gratifying. I mean, thank you for that. I am a person who has always been helped by books and writers. Books are what pull me through hard times. So to know that I can turn that around and hopefully help a younger reader, that makes me extremely happy. It makes me feel like I'm repaying a bit of the debt I owe to all the writers who came before me.
Well, and boy, do you repay that debt. And again, we mentioned before we went live, but I do want to say that, again, this audience is older, consists of mainly older women. And although I know this book is aimed at adult readers, my generation of women is really going to relate to this story because, of course, the women's movement of the 70s was a lot about gender norms and expectations and all. And your book has, as I mentioned, a delightful twist. So I'd like to start out by you giving us an overview of the story and how Arabella, your heroine, is not a typical fairy tale heroine.
Very true. Beastly Beauty is actually my take on the classic Beauty and the Beast fairy tale, but my story flips the script. In the classic version, as we know, you know, the Beast is calling all the shots and he rages and shouts and he takes prisoners, and the Beauty has to accommodate him. She has to deny her own wishes as she tries to understand him and help him become a better person. Well, I've had enough of that. So I wanted to reverse the story's power dynamic a bit, and I wanted to write the Beast as a young woman and the Beauty as a young man and see what happens. So I did, and I ended up with not one but two difficult, damaged creatures who are both angry and sad. And then I kind of watched as they worked upon each other and started to reveal some of the wounds beneath that emotional pain.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is definitely some emotional pain in that book, but I have to think Arabella must have been somewhat of a kick to write about because she is not your typical beauty, as you say.
No, she is not. Arabella is a young woman, a young noble woman who lives in France in the 1700s, and she is feisty and passionate, and she wants more than anything else to be an architect. She's so smart. She wants to build things of beauty, castles and palaces and cathedrals. But she's told, no, you can't do any of that. Your only duty is to marry well. You know, you're a duke's child and you need to keep producing heirs and heiresses. So that's what you're going to do. And that really crushes Arabella. She tries so hard to please her parents and to sort of live up to society's expectations. But ultimately, she can't do it because all these emotions are churning inside her. And eventually, they burst out.
Well, and two, again, you're referring to the original story, Beauty and the Beast, but I'm wondering, did you kind of go back in your memory and think about that? Did you have an aha moment? Like, I really want to flip the script on this one.
Yes, I always do that with my fairy tale retellings. I have questions. You know, I had them since I was 5 years old. if you read Cinderella, I remember, you know, distinctly reading my little golden book edition of this and looking at the ugly stepsisters and, you know, wondering, well, why are they ugly? Is it their hair? Is it their big noses? Because I have a big nose. Is it their big feet? Because I have a big feet. Does that mean I'm ugly? So it's like, it's sort of having these questions since I'm a young child and really, really wanting to get answers to them.
Well, and I'm thinking, because you do refer to fairy tales, you know, in many of your books. And so why do you think, I mean, these fables were written or, you know, probably orally handed down for, you know, for millennia, actually, probably. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, but they've been around for a while. So why do you think they still resonate with people so deeply, especially maybe younger readers?
I think you're absolutely right, Lynn. They have been around centuries and millennia, and I'm a bit obsessed with them. Some people think of fairy tales as these sort of, you know, simple princessy stories with neat and tidy happy endings, but they're actually very rich, very complex, and often very dark. And once you hear one of these tales, you really never forget it. These characters stay with you. I mean, we all know who Cinderella is, or Hansel and Gretel, or Little Red Riding Hood. And I've wondered, you know, why is that? Why do these weird little stories get into our hearts and stay there? And I think the answer is because they tell us the truth. If you go back to the old versions of these fairy tales that you encounter in the Brothers Grimm, they're hard stories. And the Brothers Grimm pulled no punches. They can be very dark. They can be very bloody. And I think, you know, the reason we're compelled toward these tales as young children is because we sense that our world is a little harder and darker than adults are letting on. And these stories confirm that. They tell us that, yes, the world can be a difficult place. Yes, there are monsters out there. Yes, there's a dark wood. But then they give us hope and they tell us you can beat those monsters, just like Hansel and Gretel beat the witch, just like Little Red Riding Hood beat the wolf. And you can get yourself out of this dark place. You have everything inside you, courage, brains that you need to get out of the dark woods and find your way home.
Well, you know, I've never thought about things like that, Jennifer, but I'm sure you're onto something. And so, again, in your own writing, you like to take these basic stories that we've known for years, you know, and oftentimes, you know, put a special twist on them, but kind of refresh that feeling of we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we can. And I think these, you know, these fairy tales not only tell us truth and give us hope, but they're a little bit of an instruction manual for how to get through life, how to live life. The original Beauty and the Beast tale was written by, a French woman back in the 1700s of the upper class who was well acquainted with arranged marriages as a bit of a way to soothe a young girl's fears who was facing an arranged marriage. You know, maybe you're 16 or 17 years old, you're living in 1780s France, your dad comes home and says, I found a husband for you, and maybe this man's a bit older, maybe he's got a beard, you know, maybe he's loud. This story helps you understand, or, you know, your mother, your aunt, your grandmother's telling you this story, and suddenly you realize if I'm good, if I behave myself, if I'm sweet and obliging, I can transform this person who seems like a beast into a handsome prince. It's a bit of a guide to life.
Wow. Well, and speaking of the handsome prince, Arabella's love interest, Beau, is also a bit of a departure from traditional male roles in fairy tales. So as they are faced with a challenge, well, several challenges, actually. So can you give us a little bit of a hint about how, again, these gender roles flip a little bit and how they relate to each other as they try to escape the castle?
Yes, so Beau is this very handsome and charming thief. He was born in Barcelona in Spain, and he was orphaned at an early age and fell in with a pack of robbers, and they've become his family. And he's sort of this turned into this person who is out for what he can get. You know, how can you use people? How can you play people? What can you take from them? So he finds himself trapped in the castle. The bridge has gone out. He's gone into the castle with his pack of thieves. They escape, the bridge crumbles underneath him, and he's left behind with the beast and with this mysterious young noblewoman. He sees the beast at midnight. He sees this young woman during the day, and they eventually warm to each other. They can't stand each other in the beginning, and she agrees to help him build this bridge to get himself out of the castle. So they're building this junky, rickety bridge together, and as they do that, they're building metaphorical bridges as well. Bridges to each other and bridges to better versions of themselves. And they find that sort of building this actual bridge forces them to confront some very hard truths about themselves and some harder emotions. It's not, I'll admit, it's not the most subtle of metaphors, but I think it works well in the story.
Well, and I also want to say, Jennifer, because, I mean, it's a highly entertaining read, and there's a lot of, you know, again, unexpected challenges that your characters have, and, you know, and but you also hope to impart some life lessons in this book, and we've alluded to a number of those, but anything that you're hoping that your readers of any age will take away from Beastly Beauty?
Yes, very much so. I think the most important thing I want readers to take from the book is that we all ultimately hold the key to our own happiness in our own hands, and that no beast or beauty or king or princess can save us or doom us, because we ourselves, each and every one of us, you know, we're the hero of our own story. I think that's such an important message, and the fact that we're the ones responsible for our own happy endings.
Oh, that, I mean, yeah. And I mean, again, I'm of a certain age and I've lived a lot of life, and I totally agree with that message, because we are the ones responsible for our own happy ending. Exactly. And I also want to, before we have to leave, you have a website, and it's wonderful because you share samples of your book. So where can our listeners go to find out more about you and your work and these fabulous books that you've shared with your audience?
They can go to jenniferdonnelly.com, my website, and they can also follow me on all my socials at Jen Writes Books.
Wow. Well, Jennifer, I have so enjoyed this interview with you. You have such a delightful way about you, and congratulations again on all your success. You've earned it with your wonderful imagination, creativity, and delightful storytelling. So thank you so much.
Oh, Eileen, that's so kind of you. Thank you very much.
And for you listeners out there, make sure you check out each of Jennifer's books and her website, again, her social media as well, but her website, jenniferdonnelly.com, because her stories are going to give you and your loved ones of any age many hours of reading pleasure and lots of food for thought. So until next time, this is Mary Eileen Williams at Feisty Side of 50 Radio, saying I'll catch you later. Bye-bye.